if it was forged information and somebody knew it, then the question is, why didn't the president know it? Why didn't all those who vetted the speech know it? And if they did know it, why did they not act on it?
But this Bush administration is not the first one to create lies to push us into the war. But it is the first one to so openly confess to using lies to push us into a war.
If Iraq is not a quagmire, it offers a dangerously close imitation.
I felt like what we were doing that day was civil obedience. And to stand up to the judge and say, no, I am not a criminal. I don't care if you want to jail me. I don't care what you want to do to me. I'm not afraid to lay down my body.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, July 11th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. President Bush is blaming the CIA for the false statement he made to the nation about Iraq trying to buy nuclear material from Niger. Bush said today that intelligence services cleared his State of the Union speech, which included a now discredited allegation that Saddam Hussein was seeking to purchase nuclear material from Africa. Bush's national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, said specifically, the CIA had vetted the speech. If CIA Director George Tenet had any misgivings about that sentence in the president's speech, she said, he did not make them known to Bush or his staff. Senior U.S. officials said earlier this week American intelligence officials expressed doubts before and after his State of the Union address about a British intelligence report Bush cited to back up his false allegations. Those doubts were relayed to British officials before they made them public and were passed to people at several agencies of the U.S. government before Bush gave his nationally broadcast speech. The White House this week admitted the charge about Iraq seeking uranium should not have appeared in his speech. When asked during a meeting with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni how erroneous material had ended up in the address, Bush said, quote, "I gave a speech to the nation that was cleared by the intelligence services," unquote. He did not answer when pressed again on how it wound up in his speech. Democratic Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois has co-authored a House resolution calling for an independent commission to investigate the intelligence used to justify launching a preemptive attack against Iraq. Peace Watch spoke with her today about the significance of the White House's acknowledgement.
Well, I think it was very significant, and the fact that the president seems to be dismissing it as one rather unimportant piece of information is really troubling, and that's why many of us, even prior to this admission, have been calling for an independent investigation of the information that the administration had and the public representations that were made by the executive branch regarding the threats. But, you know, when you talk about a pretext for preemptive war in response to the prediction of some sort of a forthcoming attack on the United States, then what the American people and certainly the Congress needs to rely on is very good intelligence. We cannot be misled by, made-up information or manipulated information or forged evidence. So I think it's very significant and that it certainly played a role.
Mm-hmm. Well, Republicans are, of course, downplaying this, and they're saying that this was simply one line in a broader speech. And if it were false information, the onus would lie on the CIA, which signed off on this address, apparently, and did not say that that line should be struck.
Well, we have heard from news reports that they actually may have changed that line from saying that there was U.S. intelligence that indicated the effort to buy nuclear material from Niger, but then they changed it to, well, British intelligence, because there was some queasiness about it. This is the kind of information, though, that we need to find out. But it's not the only information mm-hmm. that I think that we think may be inaccurate.
Before we move on to other information, I think the administration is saying, well, but the president had no knowledge of this. And the bottom line is that the CIA did sign off ultimately on what it was he had to say, what he said to the American people.
If it was forged information and somebody knew it, then the question is, why didn't the president know it? Why didn't all those who vetted the speech know it? And if they did know it, why did they not act on it? But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, where was this information if it was really there? Many of us think that it wasn't there at all, that in fact the information that was had was clearly that the reports had come back, they were unequivocal, there was no evidence about it. And so, you know, we can question the intelligence, but I think it's more clear now that this was a clear decision that was made to use that statement because it was the kind of provocative statement that would provide the pretext for war.
Hmm. And you think it was very persuasive in the president's broader case to convince the American people that it was necessary to go to war? There was evidence that Iraq was trying to purchase nuclear weapons building material.
Certainly that's the scariest part. If you ask people why it is that we had to go into Iraq at the time, now they're changing the reasons as they, you know, have over the period, but they would say, look, you know, we don't want to see another 9/11. We don't want to see any kind of mushroom cloud over the United States. In fact, images of mushroom clouds were created by the administration. And so this notion of nuclear, the ultimate weapon, was certainly important in making their case.
And in addition to that, Ambassador Joseph C. Wilson was actually sent to Africa in late 2001 or early 2002 to determine the validity of the allegations that Saddam Hussein had attempted to purchase this uranium from Niger. And he reported back in February of 2002 that there was no basis for this assertion, as well as former intelligence officer Ray McGovern of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, who served under Reagan and Bush, asserts that Wilson went to Africa at the request of Vice President Dick Cheney.
A very important point there, at the request of Vice President Dick Cheney. So one has to presume that the information was reported back to him.
Yes, if this is true, what's the likelihood that his findings were not shared with President Bush?
I think it's very unlikely, maybe not personally to the president, but high enough up so that those that were writing the speech that would come out of the president's mouth should have known, and probably, in my view, did know if the vice president already knew, and that a decision was made, therefore, to shift it to British intelligence sources.
Some people are feeling, however, as though the president may have a loophole here that he can slip through.
And what might that be, that he didn't know? I mean, that simply isn't sufficient if that's the loophole.
Mm-hmm. So you and other Democrats are calling for an independent investigation into this matter?
Yes, and the interesting part of that is that those who have who are part of the legislation and who have signed the resolution requiring an investigation, almost all of the people who were the original sponsors voted in favor of the use of force in Iraq, voted in favor of going to war in Iraq. And it's because they believe that if we're going to make the ultimate decision as policymakers, the decision to send our young men and women into harm's way to declare war on another country, then we better know the facts. The administration, they're entitled to their own opinions, but they are not entitled to their own facts.
Mm. Representative Schakowsky, back in October, you were one of 133 members of the House and 126 Democrats who, in fact, voted against HJ Resolution 114. Of course, that was a bill to authorize the president to use military force against Iraq. At the time, however, 81 Democrats voted in favor of the bill, and throughout the war, much of the leadership of the Democratic Party has stood firmly behind the president. Do you think your party has taken a strong enough stance on this issue?
Well, again, about 22 of those who voted for the war are now asking for more information. I was part of a whip team, a team of members who were going around and encouraging others in our party to vote against the war. And I'm proud that 60% of the Democrats in the House voted against the war resolution. I think that's a large number, and clearly distinguished ourselves from the Republicans, who almost unanimously supported that. Of course, I would have liked to have seen the war resolution voted down, and I would have liked to have seen all the Democrats doing that. But I do see that, you know, and this really, this goes so far beyond party and partisan politics. This is, as I said, the most important policy decision. So, yes, I'd like to see more Republicans and Democrats now asking to get to the bottom of this before we go marching off into another country on trumped-up evidence.
Mm. So this is beyond partisan politics. Does this, in your opinion, Representative Schakowsky, rise to the level of impeachable crimes, perhaps?
Well, I certainly think that we have to look very carefully at this. And you know, the word impeachment has come up now and then. And when you compare the, you know, Bill Clinton was impeached for having an affair with an intern, although people will say, no, he was really impeached because he lied. Well, then, if we discover that there was a lie here, that a decision was made to lie, that the president himself made a decision to manufacture evidence about going to war, I certainly think that it rises to a level much higher than the impeachable offense, so-called, of the former president, President Clinton. So I'm not ready to call for impeachment, but I'm certainly ready to try and get to the bottom of the veracity of his statements, whether he lied or not.
And the Democratic National Committee is sponsoring an ad campaign calling on Americans to sign a petition calling for an independent commission to investigate the intelligence used to justify the war in Iraq. What's the status of that?
Well, there's a drumbeat beginning to go here. And it's coming from not only the Democratic National Committee. We're starting to see editorial support around the country, even from newspapers that were pretty enthusiastic about the war. We're finding that more and more of the more educated and elite, you know, professor types, et cetera, saying we have to have an investigation. And maybe even more, what we're starting to hear from our own constituents is, tell us the truth. We just need to know. Even those people who say, well, even so, the war was justified, they want to know. And that's the most important thing. When the parents of the troops in Iraq, when ordinary citizens from the sidelines in 4th of July parades are saying, you know, continue with an inquiry, let's get to the bottom, ask the questions, keep asking the questions, those are the things I was hearing. That's what's really significant to me.
You and your colleague, Representative Henry Waxman, have co-authored House Resolution 2625 calling for an independent commission to examine the intelligence about Iraq and the representations made by the administration. But in this Republican-controlled Congress, Representative, what chances do you really have of getting this legislation passed?
Well, you know, I think the president's statements when he's on his trip to Africa are indicative of the way they'd like to treat it, which is just to dismiss it. It's not important. It's just one shred of evidence. We don't need to do this. But it's not really taking. I'm feeling growing pressure and growing support. This isn't going to be a one-day story. They're not going to be able to finesse it. Photo opportunities, I don't think, are going to work on this. The American people are now finding out that this war in Iraq is costing about $4 billion a month, and that doesn't even consider the cost of reconstruction. That's just maintaining our troops there. Our presence in Afghanistan right now is about $1 billion a month, and the situation is still not stabilized there. And so I think this is going to continue to build because it's affecting so many aspects of our lives now, you know, with troops getting killed every day. We want to know, was this really worth it? Was this the right thing to do? Was it based on truth or was it based on a lie?
One quick follow-up to the loophole question that I raised earlier. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice has sought to disclaim the president that he misled the American people by saying that the CIA signed off on Bush's speech. And even given, you know, what you said about former President Clinton was caught in a lie about an affair, he also was caught on tape, in a sworn deposition lying. Do you think that this kind of evidence would be available in the instance of this whole situation around Iraq and what the president knew and when he knew it and that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, I don't know why Condoleezza Rice didn't know this. It really is unclear to me how much is really what conversations take place with the president of the United States. There may be some kind of a smoking gun, but in terms of the use of that phrase in the State of the Union, well, Condoleezza Rice is just not sufficient for her to say, well, we just didn't know. And in terms of the CIA as kind of this loophole, we're also now finding evidence that the CIA was under extreme pressure to come up with information and analyses that matched what the administration wanted, that Dick Cheney would go over there and visit, that they set up independent intelligence group, kind of a Team B within the Pentagon, because they didn't like what the CIA was saying. Tenet was under enormous pressure, the head of the CIA, because of the failure to predict the 9/11 attack. So he was feeling vulnerable. Some were calling for his dismissal. And so there's a lot of building evidence also that there was pressure on the CIA to come up with conclusions that matched what the administration wanted, regardless of the actual evidence that they had.
Mm. At the same time, however, there'd have to be some sort of smoking gun, would there not?
Well, I would think that, I don't know if we'll have actually tapes, but I think that we know now for sure that the information was forged information, that there was no accuracy to the uranium deal in Africa. I guess what's missing is who exactly knew, when did they know it, who did they communicate that with, and that's the point of this investigation.
The other aspect of that, however, is that the administration continues to point the finger at British intelligence, and we see in this morning's Washington Post where the British have said that they had intelligence information that was unavailable to the U.S., which sort of creates another little opportunity for the Bush administration to slip another loophole possibility.
It may be. I think we need to look carefully into it. But as I said, this is not the only problem or the only, I think, manipulated evidence of our need to go to war. I think that this isn't the only one and only piece. I think we're talking about this connection with Al-Qaeda, which really was never established or was inconsequential, mm-hmm. if there was one, mm-hmm. that there was an ongoing development of biological and chemical weapons, so there were a number of other things, even in the State of the Union address that Hussein had attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production, was a statement in that mm-hmm. State of the Union. Well, doesn't look like it seemed like those were for conventional rockets.
And, of course, where are the weapons
where
of
are
mass
the weapons?
Destruction?
You know, where are the weapons of mass destruction? But I think, actually, an even more important and substantive question is, even if we find some weapons of mass destruction, the question is, did they pose an imminent threat to the United States? And the intelligence community seemed to think, initially at least, and even Dick Armey and Trent Lott expressed some skepticism about going to war. The question really was, is this an imminent threat? And the CIA, in an earlier report in 2002, talking about nuclear weapons, talked about North Korea, but they didn't even mention Iraq in their report. So, you know, there's a lot of outstanding questions that I think need to be answered as this administration moves forward with a foreign policy.
Congresswoman Janice Schakowsky, Democrat of Illinois, thank you very much for your time and perspective. Any final thoughts on your part?
Well, I just think this notion of preemptive attack, preemptive war, has left Americans not safer since 9/11, since that attack, but actually Americans need to ask themselves whether they really are safer now than they were 2 years ago or, you know, after that attack? I think the answer is no, and I think it's important for us to know all of the details of decisions that have been made.
U.S. Representative Jen Schakowsky. The White House's acknowledgement Monday that President Bush had made inaccurate claims about Iraqi attempts to obtain uranium from Africa came in response to a similar brewing controversy in the United Kingdom. Earlier this week, the Foreign Affairs Committee of the British Parliament released a report questioning the reliability of British intelligence about Saddam Hussein's efforts to obtain weapons of mass destruction in the run-up to the war in Iraq. An intelligence consultant confirmed that Bush was told the intelligence was questionable, but he chose to use it anyway. Additionally, Bush's national security advisers apparently urged him not to include the claim in his State of the Union address. This little matter has caused a much greater political uproar in Britain than it has here in the United States. Meanwhile, no weapons of mass destruction have turned up inside Iraq itself. One Kurdish official described the hunt for weapons as a, quote, giant Easter egg hunt, unquote. And he said with frustration, "I can't get hold of any American officers because they are all out trying to win promotions by being the first to find weapons of mass destruction," unquote. Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles spoke earlier this week with Rania Masri, an Arab-American anti-war activist with the Institute for Southern Studies and the director of the Southern Peace Research and Education Center. Masri gave an in-depth analysis of the current situation on the ground in Iraq, but she began by discussing the recent New York Times editorial by former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, where he stated that he had refuted intelligence linking Iraq to Iranian sales from Africa almost a year before Bush's January 28th State of the Union address.
The question that we have to ask ourselves is, why isn't this becoming the scandal in this country that it is becoming in Great Britain? When we have our Vice President, Colin Powell, including not only these two gentlemen, but also Paul Wolfowitz, making really clear statements that they deliberately lied to us. And yet it is not becoming the scandal that it was when we compare Clinton's lies regarding a personal scandal, Nixon's lies regarding using the FBI to spy on people. Those, yes, were scandals, but they were of much, much lesser degree than this great scandal of deliberately using lies, manufacturing lies for more than 1 year in order to push this country into a war that has killed thousands of Iraqis that we know of, and a war that has killed more than 100 U.S. men and women in the armed forces.
And I just want to let listeners know again, the New York Times article that I mentioned is entitled "What I Didn't Find in Africa" by Joseph C. Wilson IV. It was published on the 6th of July, where he talks about his trip to Niger and his confirmation that there was no real link between that country and Iraq in terms of any sales of uranium weapons material. He did a lot of researching and he could not confirm any of the reports. In terms of what's happening on the ground in Iraq as well, there was this big hunt, and now, of course, the hunt seems to have been abandoned a little, at least on the PR front, this big hunt for these supposed weapons that Iraq was hiding somewhere. There were all sorts of stories about how they could possibly be hiding on mobile trailers, moved from place to place so that U.S. forces couldn't find them. Your thoughts on that?
Well, if it weren't so serious, it would actually be rather funny. We have had approximately 280 days of descriptions of this Iraqi arsenal that is coming on the heels of 7 years of UNSCOM weapons inspections in Iraq, 4 years of surveillance, months of UNMOVIC weapons inspections. Then we had the U.S. and British forces go in there where they searched everywhere. These are the words of a Marine commander, that they searched everywhere and found nothing. They then interrogated dozens of scientists and officers who now that they can say, the Americans can say, that these scientists and officers have nothing to hide anymore because Saddam Hussein is no longer in power. The dreaded mobile labs that Colin Powell talked about at the UN turned out to be nothing more than weather balloon platforms sold to Iraq by the British. So this great creation of weapons of mass destruction turned out to be balloon platforms. And if we remember even more, we had in that infamous State of the Union address by, you know, George Bush, he stated that there are 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and VX nerve agent gas in Iraq. 500 tons of gas, in other words, 1 million pounds. So we're not talking about a little amount here. We're talking about 1 million pounds of gas that Bush said the Iraqis had, and he stated this back in January 28th of this year. And they can't find 1 million pounds. And they were stating earlier that this 1 million pounds is only a small part of the Iraqi weapons arsenal, and they still can't find that 1 million pounds. And again, none of this really should come as a surprise when we look at the statements made by not only the Bush administration, but we date it back to the Bush senior administration and the Clinton administration, and we look at how they have used lies to push their agenda. If we remember back during the Bush senior administration, they specifically used lies to convince the Saudi government to accept the American occupation of Saudi Arabia in order to protect them against the Iraqis. They showed them satellite photographs that the Iraqi troops were amassing at the Saudi border. Those satellite photographs turned out to be completely fabricated, and they resulted in U.S. troops being in Saudi. They resulted in the Saudi acceptance of that war. So, you know, this Bush administration is not the first one to create lies to push us into the war, but it is the first one to so openly confess to using lies to push us into a war.
And of course, this little matter of lies is not going to get nearly as much attention in the corporate media, on the TV network news, where a large percentage of Americans get their information, as Bush's State of the Union address was, as Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice's statements were in the lead up to the war on Iraq. So much of this has been a matter of PR, and in terms of what the population of the United States will ultimately remember from this whole experience, it'll probably not be the fact that Bush lied, but the fact that Bush convinced them. In Britain, however, it is a different situation. In Britain, Tony Blair is facing a very serious political problem. Even in Australia, the Australian MP is facing serious problems and being questioned much more seriously by his constituency than here in the United States.
Well, yes, very much so. What creates the scandal is really the press. It's not just the information itself, it's the press. And according to one last poll that came out just a few weeks ago, actually just 1 week ago, it states that 23% of the American public believes weapons of mass destruction have been found in Iraq. An earlier poll that came out in May actually stated that we have approximately 30% of the American public that believe that weapons of mass destruction were used by the Iraqis in the war. Not only were they found, that the Iraqis actually used them. So to a great degree, our corporate press is just as culpable as the Bush administration. But we must not forget our Congress. We must not forget that we have congressional representatives that willingly accepted these lies, and we have congressional representatives that are refusing to hold the administration accountable. And we need to hold them accountable, especially now with elections coming up. And we also need to remember who are our representatives in Congress who are holding the administration accountable. We have approximately 36 representatives that signed a House resolution bill demanding that the administration back up its claims about the Iraqi weapons arsenal. And I would encourage everybody to check this bill and identify if their representative specifically has signed it. And to my knowledge, looking at these names, I don't believe that we have that many representatives from California who have signed it. It's a bill that has been sponsored by Dennis Kucinich, who I believe is the only peace candidate we have right now calling for the Democratic candidacy for presidency. So I would urge everyone just to check that, House Resolution 260.
That's H.R. 260. Let's talk about the situation on the ground in Iraq. The situation inside Iraq right now, if you've been keeping up with the news, is very, very serious in terms of not only the numbers of course, U.S. Forces that are being killed, but the Iraqi people are much seriously suffering. And what's really incredible is that the amount of money that the United States has spent on actually funding the occupation versus funding simple, basic public services for Iraqis has been stunning.
Well, yes, and again, it's all to be expected. You know, those of us who are familiar with the region can see glaring similarities between the U.S. occupation of Iraq, and that is what it is. It is an occupation. Glaring similarities between that occupation and the Israeli occupation of the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip. Really glaring. I'll give you a few. We already have the U.S. troops in Iraq demolishing homes of suspected freedom fighters, you know, already. They are arresting people. They are harassing people at checkpoints, including children and women, really harassing them in a way that not only is a violation of civil rights, but also a violation of that culture. They are mass using shooting into protest, even nonviolent protest and the like. They themselves are feeding the resistance movements in Iraq, just like the Israeli occupation in the occupied territories is itself feeding the resistance movement against the occupation. And we also need to consider that it's not only the military occupation that is extremely destructive. We also have the corporate invasion of Iraq, which I believe is one of the primary reasons that this war was led. We have Bremer and the Bush administration stating openly, and this is really the benefit of having this administration, they just say it like it is, they don't mince words, and they're saying openly that their major objective right now in Iraq is to shift Iraq from state-dominated economies to a free market economy. And this completely fits in line with Bush's U.S. Middle East Free Trade Area proposal that he wants to have imposed on the Middle East within 10 years, which would ensure U.S. and Israeli hegemony in the region in the sense of presenting it all under this free market perspective, which is really, it's not a free market. It's a market that will become freed for U.S. and foreign investments and U.S. and foreign corporations. They are openly calling for privatization of everything in Iraq, from state ministries to oil to the water system. And it is this level of privatization that I believe may be more damaging to the Iraqis than the occupation itself, and possibly even more damaging than the 12-plus years of sanctions.
Rania Masri is an Arab-American anti-war activist with the Institute for Southern Studies and the director of the Southern Peace Research and Education Center. She was interviewed by Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.